I hope I am still thankful a year from now. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Chris Gao, and Eliza Yurkov. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Kathleen Shannon, Edwin J. Vieira, Freda Ross, Brian Bull, Suzanne Potter, and Tramel Gomes. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Harper Mahood. Sunday, December 1st marks World AIDS Day, an international day dedicated to raising awareness and mourning those who have died of the disease. Recently, I had the chance to sit down with Troy Preble of Cascade AIDS Project to talk about how community members can honor the day locally. Here is our conversation. I'm just going to start off by asking you if you would introduce yourself and just tell me a little bit about why you're here today.
Sure. My name is Troy Preble, and I am the Aging Well Manager of Programming at Cascade AIDS Project. And the reason why we're here to do the interview is to, one, educate the public a little bit about what World AIDS Day means and what our Aging Well program offers, and to advertise our event on November 30th.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that event?
Absolutely. The event is November 30th. Doors are at 1, and the event starts at 2. It's located at the Old Church in downtown Portland, and we are offering beer and wine and snacks before the event starts. We have 5 storytellers who are long-term survivors who will tell their stories of survival and resilience. Now, a long-term survivor is someone who was positive before 1997. And the reason I use 1997 as a marker is that is when the protease inhibitors came out. And that's a medication treatment that stops reproduction of HIV in the body and allows for the immune system to recover. And so being positive before 1997 was a significantly different experience than turning positive after 1997. I myself was diagnosed in 1994, and I was 26 years old. So I was a 26-year-old with a death sentence. And a matter of fact, a doctor told me that I would not live past 30. And honestly, that seemed ambitious at the time because I saw what was going on around me. But I made it through, and here I am today.
That's a great origin story for the work that you're doing now.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the reason why you got into this?
Yes. I used to work in Cascade AIDS Project Vancouver office as a peer support. And the job opened up because the manager retired. And so I was like, I want that job. I've been interested in long-term survivors and what that means and how long-term survivors were affected by the AIDS era. I've been interested in that for a long time. And so the opportunity opened up and I interviewed and got the job. And so what our program does is it offers support to aging adults with HIV, a lot of which are long-term survivors. And so we aim to end isolation, improve health and wellness, and reduce stigma. A long-term survivor is not only someone who was positive before 1997, but it's also people who weren't positive before 1997 and lived through that era, buried loved ones, buried friends, took care of friends. The community really came together to take care of itself because society was not doing a good job of that. So a long-term survivor can be someone who lived through that time and that experience. They carry the same issues today that someone with HIV had before 1997. Someone with HIV before 1997, a lot of the conditions, some people call it AIDS survivor syndrome, and they carry conditions today of higher rates of depression and anxiety, low self-worth, low self-esteem, substance abuse to deal with their memories, and social withdrawal. They may feel like there's no place for them in the community, but there is, and that's our program.
And how many people are you working with in the Portland metro area?
Our Aging Well program has about 200 active participants. We hold weekly events. We have a weekly coffee, a weekly happy hour, and a weekly Zoom. Those are always going on every week. But then we also have many events that are interspersed amongst the month. We have a lunch and learn. We have a steering committee, which is where the participants help guide the program. We offer Qigong on Zoom. It works really well, actually. And we offer a healthy living chat and an art class.
I'm curious if we could talk a little bit more broadly about World AIDS Day and just how members of our community can help honor both the victims and the people who are living with this.
Yeah, World AIDS Day is a great time to honor those that have passed away from AIDS. There are a lot more people out there in the community than people realize. They knew someone who passed away. So it's a great time to honor those people that have passed away, but it's also a great time to look at how far we've come. Now, if someone turns HIV positive, they just take a pill and they're fine. It's such a difference in what happens to a person. But it also is just a time to honor what happened and remember what happened so that it doesn't happen again. We could be one virus away from it happening again. So it's just really critical that people remember and do not forget.
I'm curious with the current political state in the United States, if that's a concern for you, access to care, access to prevention.
Absolutely. This administration that's coming in is really hell-bent on cutting spending. So it is a worry for organizations like Cascade AIDS Project that our funding will be cut significantly. And so there is kind of a fear for the future. During the last Trump administration, we thought there would be cuts, and there was not. But this is a very different administration this time. There's people in place that's their main job is to cut spending. So yeah, we're a little fearful.
What can attendees expect to take away from this event?
What attendees can expect to take away from the event are the survivor stories who I've all heard, and they're amazing. We've had a gentleman named Paul Irabino that has a company called Our Bold Voices, and he's worked with our participants for 5-6 weeks to develop their stories. And so the stories are amazing. What someone can take away is the aspect of what it took to survive, the resilience it took, and the resilience it took to recover, because once the protease inhibitors came out, people had to recover their lives. They expected to die. And so it was a serious, what are we going to do now type moment. I went through that myself. I was expected to die. And so I just kind of decided to party my way out. And then once protease inhibitors came out, I'm like, oh no, that was a mistake because I'm not going to die. So what people will get away from it is the resilience it took to survive and just honor that.
How did you make that transition from the mindset that things would end in a couple years to, oh, I have this whole life to live?
It took a long time. It took years. It took years for me to realize that I'm not going to die, even though I was taking medications that would prevent that. But there was such a mindset that I was to die. And then when it wasn't going to happen, it took me years to put my life back together in a place where I wanted it to be, because I wasn't focused on work at the time, because again, I was going to die. So I had to develop a career. I had to develop financial security, because before 1997, I was just spending all the money I could make. So it took a long time to put my life back together.
But now you're here and you're helping other survivors, and that's incredible. There historically has been such a stigma surrounding HIV and AIDS. In your personal experience and with the people that you work with, how do you combat that and deal with the stigma?
Stigma, unfortunately, still exists. It's not as bad as it was in the AIDS era, because it was bad back then. A lot of families disowned their sons, just absolutely terrible. And society in general just had a really negative view of people that had AIDS. And they misunderstood what AIDS is. They thought AIDS was a virus. AIDS is not a virus. AIDS is a condition that someone with HIV can develop if their HIV is untreated. So AIDS is actually just a condition. For our program, just getting together with other long-term survivors or people that are aging with HIV is really significant, because it just makes a safe place for someone to be. They can talk about their experience having HIV in a more advanced age, because it does affect the body. Having HIV is constant inflammation in the body. And so it does develop into other sorts of conditions that kind of go around the HIV virus. My personal doctor told me one day, kind of laughingly, that he didn't expect to become a cardiologist because he was treating patients back in the AIDS era. And so he's having to work with conditions that he didn't expect now. There's a higher rate of heart issues among people with HIV, so it's really important to stay on top of that. The stigma still comes from society, so just getting together and making a safe place for people can reduce internalized stigma.
And your event,
yeah,
that's a great place to start.
Yeah, World AIDS Day is a great place to start, because it humanizes the experience that these people had.
Outside of celebrating World AIDS Day, what other steps can people take to honor those who've been impacted by HIV and to continue to raise awareness?
That's possible by just spreading the word that it's not transmitted by a toilet seat. There's an alarmingly number of Americans that think you can still get HIV from a toilet seat or a drinking glass. And that's really terrible and sad, because you can't. So it's just really kind of spreading information around. The public can do this by talking about it, talking about how it's not spread by toilet seats and not spread by drinking glasses. And so talking about it will really help the stigma that's out there. Like our event, communicating the experiences of these people will also help reduce their stigma.
As someone who's lived with HIV for a long time, do you ever get exhausted with having to explain yourself and explain what HIV is to people?
It's somewhat of a job to fully explain what HIV is. In Portland, it's less of an issue. I think people are just better educated about the issue here, which is a lot of the work that Cascade AIDS Project has done historically. Cascade AIDS Project has been serving community with HIV for 40 years, which is a very long time. And so it's just really organizations like ours that have done the work to spread the word about HIV in the community.
Where can folks find out more?
Folks can find out more at agingwellnw.org. And there's an events calendar on our webpage. Just click on events calendar and it opens up a calendar, and you can click on World AIDS Day on November 30th and it will give you more information. There's a link to RSVP, but honestly, you don't have to RSVP. You can just show up. The RSVP was just to kind of get an idea of how much wine and beer we needed to bring. So again, the event's November 30th. Doors at 1. Event starts at 2 and it's at the Old Church in downtown Portland.
That was Troy Preble with Cascade AIDS Project. Cascade AIDS Project is hosting a World AIDS Day event on Saturday, November 30th at the Old Church in downtown Portland. Doors open at 1 p.m. To find out more, visit agingwellnw.org.
You're listening to KBOO's News in Depth. I'm Eliza Yurkov. Today, we're joined by Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief of the Street Roots newspaper. Street Roots started 25 years ago in 1999 with a mission to provide income opportunities for those experiencing homelessness and poverty. It is a member of the International Framework of Street Papers, INSP, that supports the global effort in empowering people to tackle poverty and homelessness through journalism. The once monthly, now weekly newspaper is available for vendors to purchase at cost for 25 cents each. They then can sell them on the street for a dollar and keep all the income and profits. More than 800 vendors sell the newspaper during the course of the year, and this week's issue centers them. Their tagline, "For those who can't afford free speech," encompasses the complexities of journalism, homelessness, and the intersections between the two. While a typical issue features content from professional journalists on social justice issues, today's edition spotlights the very people the nonprofit works to uplift. The personal stories of the vendors are critical not just to the Street Roots mission, but to the community it serves as well. The newspaper publishes a fall vendor issue and an annual holiday zine that features vendor stories, poetry, and art. This year was particularly fruitful, with two vendor issues, one published earlier this spring and the fall issue published today. Our conversation with Kay explores the Street Roots model and what to expect in this upcoming issue. Kay, can you tell us how that model started?
Yeah, I mean, Street Roots is part of an international network of street papers. I mean, generally that means that vendors are folks who are experiencing homelessness or poverty, and they will buy the newspaper from Street Roots basically at cost and then go sell it for a profit and keep all the profits. And Street Roots has been in Portland working on that model for over 25 years now.
With this international model, is there a body that kind of dictates how Street Roots specifically operates, or is it pretty independent?
Each street paper operates independently of the INSP or International Network of Street Papers. The INSP really serves as more of like a place where different street papers can exchange ideas. We share content between all of our papers, so anything that we publish, other street papers can publish. Yeah, I mean, it's really there to kind of support street papers rather than direct them.
Not a lot of other journalistic bodies operate with that model. What changes has Street Roots made since its inception? Have there been any changes to this model? And do you foresee any changes happening in the future, especially as the political landscape kind of changes pretty rapidly?
Well, I mean, Street Roots has definitely changed over the years. Even in terms of appearance and the type of journalism that the newspaper does. I mean, it also used to be published monthly and then biweekly, and now we are a weekly newspaper. You know, in terms of the political climate and how that impacts Street Roots, I mean, I think we will keep going. Ideally, there are fewer and fewer people who need to sell Street Roots, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot for us to cover as a newspaper, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
You said that the content of the newspaper has changed over time. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I mean, Street Roots has really become more and more an investigative newspaper. We do still provide coverage of local initiatives and laws, and even state and federal laws as they progress, as they relate to social and economic equity. But, you know, I think especially in the last 5 years, Street Roots has really become more and more known for its investigative journalism.
Speaking of investigative journalism and highlighting people's stories, this issue is highlighting the vendors throughout, even though each issue does contain pieces featuring and written by vendors. Is there more than one vendor-focused issue throughout the year, or is this kind of the big debut of that?
Well, we typically publish a vendor issue every fall. You know, we did publish one in the spring this year. You know, there are hundreds of vendors that sell Street Roots throughout the year. So So, and a lot of them are writers and poets and artists themselves. So, you know, and our newspaper, our typical newspaper is full of news content, you know, relevant opinion pieces, often from local experts or community members. So there just isn't a ton of space in the typical newspaper that we publish for vendor content. You know, we typically have one page of vendor poetry and then a page that highlights a particular vendor in a weekly vendor profile. These vendor issues really serve as a place where we can publish a lot of vendor work at once and at the same time really highlight the vendors and who they are and their own individual stories and perspectives. So that's what the vendor issues focus on. And we were fortunate enough to have enough content this year from our vendors that we were able to do two full issues focusing on vendors.
In this issue, it opens by talking about the new location that y'all just opened up. Can you tell me a little more about the move and why it happened and what it means to the community for the new Street Roots location?
Yeah, our previous location was just really small, to be honest. It was over on Davis Street. Now we are on Burnside in a more central location. So there's a lot of benefit there for, you know, folks who maybe want to become vendors or people who want to volunteer or support Street Roots in some way. It's a much more prominent location than our previous spot on Davis Street. But the big difference is space. And, you know, historically there was just, everyone was kind of having to work on top of each other or work from home or from, you know, some sort of alternate location. And vendors didn't really have space to spend time in the vendor office. You know, the line typically went out the door. And one benefit here, I think a major benefit, is that there's a lot of space for vendors. You know, there are tables and chairs and places where folks can kind of just have coffee and spend time together. People don't have to wait in the cold or heat to buy a paper. So there's a lot of benefits for the vendors. And then I think, you know, for the staff, really nice to be able, for all of us to be able to work from the same location and be able to do so comfortably.
Having a workspace is a privilege that can be a hard thing to remember. And so it's really special that Street Roots gets this new location. Since this new location is larger and, you know, vendors will be spending more time and creating that kind of community there, is Street Roots connected to other organizations to provide vendors with other services like job readiness programs and potential housing and things like that?
I mean, I think that that's something that Street Roots has really focused a lot more on in recent years, especially kind of starting during the pandemic. Street Roots launched what it calls the Ambassador Program, which at the time was a group of vendors who would go and kind of distribute COVID information to encampments and help set up kind of quarantine spaces in encampments if somebody was COVID positive. And, you know, I think those efforts and the Rose City Resource Guide, which has been around for a long time now, have really led to more efforts beyond serving vendors, you know, by giving them this low barrier employment opportunity, and has expanded, I think, toward helping vendors connect with services. And we now have a Rose City Resource and Systems Navigator position where the person who serves in that role does kind of what you're describing in terms of just making it known to vendors what programs exist, how to connect with them, how to, you know, get things like healthcare. So there is definitely some of that with Street Roots.
This business model, you know, can't provide absolutely everything. And so it's special that there are a lot of ways that Street Roots can provide a lot of services while also connect the community to resources. There's another piece coming out, the Holiday Zine. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that looks like?
Yeah, the Holiday Zine is a really big deal every year. It's very popular with vendors and it's very popular with readers. It is a, you know, the newspaper is written by and laid out by professional journalists, whereas the vendor, you know, the Holiday Zine is this kind of vendor-led process where there is an editorial committee staffed by vendors. They choose the theme. This year it's My Beautiful Neighbor. And then they will curate the pieces for the zine and select the illustrations and work with staff to lay out the zine. And it's sold for $4. So it bundles with the newspaper for $5 plus a tip, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, it's something that I think, again, gives an outlet for all of the incredibly talented and creative vendors we have, as well as another opportunity for vendors to make money.
Do you have any favorite pieces from the vendor issue that just came out?
Ooh, it's hard to pick. I mean, I really like the pets portion.
Yeah, I loved that.
I really like interacting with the dogs at the office. So, you know, it's nice to see them get some recognition. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I also just appreciate the newspaper staff being able to give more space to publish vendor content. When mm-hmm. possible. I think I really look at it kind of in its totality and appreciate that we're able to do that, because I think a lot of the work is important. A lot of it, I think, is a unique perspective. I think important that our readers can not only connect with the investigative journalism that looks at the systemic causes of things like poverty and homelessness, but mm-hmm. also understanding better what the individual experiences are of our vendors. And they are, you know, a lot of our vendors have been selling street roots for a decade or longer and have transitioned from homelessness into housing. Mm. And, you know, they are themselves part of the community. So I think it's also, again, I just appreciate the opportunity for us to show them in that light, and give them that space in the paper.
Yeah, street roots, I think, does something very uniquely well, which is highlighting and telling stories of a particular community, but is also very much led by that community and gives into that community in a way that I think a lot of other projects that try to tell stories might miss out on. So it, with this vendor specific issue with the holiday zine and with the vendor specific issue in spring, it's full circle model. I think it takes a very creative approach to something as complex as homelessness and poverty. How can listeners get more involved?
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing they can do is go find a vendor and buy the newspaper. You know, we have a new one that comes out every Wednesday, so and this vendor issue is beautiful. It's in color, which, you know, our issues are typically black and white. This is a beautiful color illustration and color pages done by our editorial illustrator and designer, Edo O'Donnell King. So I think, yeah, the best way is to go buy a paper. If you can't afford it, all of our content is free to read on streetroots.org. And if you're interested in volunteering, you can reach out to volunteer coordinator at streetroots.org. And this is also, you know, the kind of big fundraising season for nonprofits. So mm-hmm. that's another great way to support Street Roots, because, you know, our staff has to make a living too. We're currently in Willamette Week's Give Guide, and we're going to be participating in the News Match campaign, which helps double donations to our newspaper in the next couple weeks here.
All right. Well, Kay, thank you so much for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief of the Street Roots newspaper. To find out more about Street Roots and how you can get involved, vendors sell newspapers all around the city, and more information is available at streetroots.org. You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth on 90.7 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.